Hi guys. I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to be a little self-indulgent today. I've told you bits and pieces about my story throughout the past year. Yeah, it's been a year. And today I thought I'd put it together for you and tell you how I got here, why I'm married and childless, and what I'm doing instead. Oh, and I have a little bit of a treat. Jeff, my husband of almost 27 years, the man who works on the podcast behind the scenes, is going to pop in for a bit to say hi. And to tell us a little bit about his very different story. I'm really looking forward to this episode. Hope you enjoy. Hi, I'm Jo Vraca. Thanks for joining me on Unripe, where, like you, I'm learning to navigate the world as a childless woman and embracing this one precious life. Join me. You know, I didn't think it would be this hard to tell my story because I'm a talker. I'm a writer. I like to think I'm an open book. Of course, I've been telling bits and pieces of how I got here through the lives of others. So this sitting here to tell you in one go, it feels really weird. I would rather be the one asking you. So here goes, indulge me. So I'm a migrant kid. I came to Australia when I was 2 and I didn't speak any English until I started school at 4. I was one of the youngest in my class, but my memories of that time are pretty dim. I do remember the first song I ever learned to sing in English was the Beatles' Yellow Submarine.
We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
When we came to Australia, me, my mum and my dad, we lived in Housing Commission flats for some time. In the US, you'd know them as the projects, I guess. They're still there and they still house newly arrived poor migrants. We left Sicily for a few reasons, political and economic. Most of you equate Italy with amazing history and food and culture, and you're not wrong, but there's been a lot of turmoil. My mum's dad died before she was born, thanks to a US airstrike over their village that crushed him under the rubble of their home, along with my 7-year-old aunt. My grandmother, who was 7 months pregnant at the time, hid in a wardrobe and was found with a gash across her belly. So my mum was born amongst a lot of chaos and fear and fatherless. She still can't stand loud noises, and they don't have to be that loud. Sicily dealt with the rubble of war for a really long time, and even without that, it's an agricultural island and doesn't have the wealth of the north. There's a lot of history that I don't know about in terms of Sicily, but I do know that it's been quite fraught. So my parents married late in life. For those times, my mum was 25 and dad was 30, and I was born around 10 months later in their home near where they both grew up, midwives and all. I don't think the doctor got there on time, and there are still no hospitals in that village. Mum still tells me that when dad came into the room after I was born, because obviously he wasn't there during the birth because that wouldn't have been done in 1969, he told Mum that after everything he heard from the other room, there is no way he wanted her to go through that again. Her screams had terrified him. But that's not to say he didn't want any more kids. I'm an only child and I spent most of my childhood on a farm, far from any other people. I was super alone and my parents were incredibly strict, so I wasn't even allowed to have friends over to stay or to stay at theirs. I was a latchkey kid. I mean, which was pretty common in the 70s, right? Even Jeff was a latchkey kid. So I'd walk my dog into the paddocks and visit the chickens and climb trees and try to get out of the way of the snakes. And in summer, I'd help my parents pack tomatoes that were then taken to the markets. We had no running hot water unless we had the fire going in the stove. The hot water pipes ran through it. And the loo was an outhouse around 10 metres from the house, which for a kid may as well have been 10 miles. School was a 1-hour bus ride away, and I was the first and last kid on the bus. It was a really simple life, and I missed it when we eventually moved back to the city when I was around 10. Even though my parents were strict, I had freedom to explore the farm because nobody would see me, and appearances are everything to my folks. So if I was a bit of a, we called it a tomboy, on the farm, as long as I wasn't doing anything like that in front of other people, then I could do whatever the hell I wanted. And I wanted more than anything to be a boy when I was a kid. I just hated being female. There were so many restrictions. But anyway, Dad was away a lot. He worked hard and he spent a lot of time at the pub. Mum hated being alone. Like, she was so frightened of being alone. So I tried to comfort her as much as a kid can. And the house felt like it was made of cardboard, you know, super cold in winter with only a fireplace in one room to keep us warm and obviously the stove in the kitchen that was on every day of the year if we wanted hot water. So even when it was, you know, 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 40 degrees Celsius, it was freaking hot in the kitchen. But yeah, in winter, we had the fireplace. And the funny thing is that fireplaces are seen as such luxuries now, but when that's the only heating you have in one room, it's really not quite a luxury. We didn't use portable heaters in the bedroom or fans, so it was really freaking miserable. But when I think about that time, I remember a distinct loneliness, but also joy. It was a time of real innocence for me. Of hiding in the fig trees, of my first cigarette, the first kiss. I wanted to grow up really fast. I begged my folks to have more kids. Not that I knew what that meant. I just knew I didn't want to be alone. We didn't have much, so it's not as though there was any entertainment. And as with pretty much all migrant parents, they worked so hard that they didn't have the energy to entertain their kids. I felt like I was in the way. They didn't read to me. I mean, not once ever in my entire life have I ever had my parents read a story to me. We didn't have money for books, so I used the library. And sometimes I never took the books back. I'm really sorry to any librarian out there. You know, Dad read the newspaper. And so for me, politics and history were the way that I engaged with him. Mum didn't talk to me about her lady troubles, but I remember that she had troubles and she had to go to hospital because of it. I still have no idea what that was about. Anyway, she didn't ever get pregnant again. So it's really tragic, you know. I'm going to gloss over my teen years because frankly, that was shit. I went to a Catholic all-girls school in a rough neighbourhood right near where I live now. And I passed that school almost every day. Yay, trigger alert. You know, I was a curly-haired, olive-skinned, slightly overweight, only child with really big eyes. And the Australian girls were cruel. I mean, they were really cruel. And I really struggled. The school was run by an order of Catholic brothers and nuns, and we had regular teachers too. I remember our one sex ed class was a nun showing us a video of a birth. Close up. The woman tore. It scarred me for life. And all I remember thinking was that I would never be so stupid as to get knocked up. Not until I wanted to anyway. And, you know, I've talked about getting my period. I was 13 or 14. Mum gave me a massive pad, sanitary pad, and that was it. So I learned about sex and periods from my friends at school. The first time I saw a man's penis and even a woman's vagina was in a porn mag someone brought to school when I was about 10. So I figured I knew everything I needed to know. We really didn't have teen pregnancies that I was aware of. You know, I watch lots of American TV. I did growing up and I do now. And the whole teen pregnancy thing is really huge. I don't remember that at all here. I knew one girl who was pregnant at 15 and she lives nearby now and she's a grandmother and her life is pretty awesome. I mean, I'm sure she wasn't thrilled to be pregnant that young. But here she is, a nana, and she's still married to the guy who knocked her up. That's kind of awesome. I mean, I see her on Facebook and she's a kind, big-hearted woman who does a lot for the community and is loved by many, and I'm pretty jealous. I suffered from depression from a really early age. It was undiagnosed, and I remember telling my mum that I wish I could be as skinny as Karen Carpenter when she died from anorexia. Mum slapped me.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near? Just like me, they long to be close to you.
I started uni when I was 17, just 17, and I moved out of home into a house with friends. I just had to get away from my folks. It was not a great time at home. I was anorexic, sometimes bulimic, and I smoked bongs most of the time from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed, and I drank a lot. In between tokes and glasses of whatever, I wrote for the student newspaper and I wrote a weekly entertainment bulletin. I lost my virginity, I ran away from home for 3 weeks, and I dyed my hair mostly blonde. It was a bad home dye job. I had a 12-month nervous breakdown at 18 and did not leave my room back home at my folks for that entire time, for a whole year. I dropped out of uni. A few things. I had a boyfriend for a minute when I was 18. I mean, really, a minute. And I really wasn't into that. I didn't dream of being someone's girl or wife or mother. Growing up, I didn't see many babies at all. So I never got to see my mum or dad interacting with babies or kids. I was a super precocious kid who didn't like losing at Monopoly. And I'm really embarrassed at my behaviour when I remember it. But I was a kid and I didn't know how else to behave. All I saw was my parents' anger. I grew up knowing that asking nicely wouldn't get me anywhere. So maybe throwing a tantrum would. I mean, it didn't, more often than not. But it did sometimes, so I guess that's how I learned to be. If I could throw a fit, at least sometimes I would get my way. So back to boyfriends. I didn't just want to bring guys home to meet my parents unless he was the guy. It's a cultural thing. Maybe not now, but certainly back then. My parents would have killed me if I brought someone home, even to say hi, unless we were planning a wedding. So I learned to, one, not get involved with anyone unless I was planning on marrying them sometime soon. Two, well, actually, that was it. I never, ever had a boyfriend except for that 5 minutes when I was 18. I didn't go on dates and certainly never talked about any of this with my folks. So by the time I was about 20, I was doing better. I was no longer in my bedroom. I had a job. I had made some friends and I got into uni again, and I decided to do it properly this time. No bongs, no booze, head down. And it worked. I passed with flying colours and even got a scholarship to do a postgrad at the University of Oregon in the US. It was another opportunity to get out of home, really. You see, there was no way I would ever be allowed to live out of home unless I was in another city. That's why I went to an out-of-town uni when I was 17. And now this, a year without my parents was a dream. It really, really was a dream. I never wanted kids. Let me reiterate. I never wanted kids. It just didn't interest me. When I thought of kids and traditional families, I felt suffocated. Despite my parents' overbearing strictness, they wanted me to go to uni, to study, and to do well. They never talked about me getting married. They never talked about relationships or family or babies. Like, not once. Now, this might sound really progressive, but really, I just think that they were super controlling and didn't want me to leave home, like ever. Given this flawed relationship that I had with my parents and the relationship I saw them having together, which really didn't appeal to me, I didn't know what a good relationship looked like. I knew about violence and anger and frustration, but not how to negotiate with anyone, let alone a partner. As far as I was concerned, men were assholes who made you change your last name and kept you from living your life, the life you wanted. Why the hell would I want that? So at 24, about to head across the ocean to Oregon, all I wanted was adventure, to learn, and to get laid. And I did all that. So by the time I met Jeff in December of 94, I was having a whale of a time. Sure, I'd had a couple of pregnancy scares, thank you, morning after pill, but life was really good. You know, we had our first date on New Year's Eve and broke up 2 days later. Then 2 days after that, after knowing each other for around 3 or 4 weeks, having dated for 2 days, we decided to get married. Yes, it's true. enjoy what you're hearing, go ahead and leave a review. A nice one, please. Right here on the app you're listening on. Reviews on Apple Podcasts in particular make it easier for others to find us. But wherever you are is just fine. And thank you.
So, you know how Joe was saying that after 2 days we decided to kind of get married? I'm a bit interested in why, because the first time I met her, I said, hey, your name's Joe, like Joey, like a baby kangaroo, right?
That was so great to hear that. Just wanted to let you know that. I loved that. That really ingratiated you to me. Not at all.
Yeah, well, you know, like, must have done something right 27 years on. Here we still are, so, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
So that was Jeff, you guys.
Why,
he'll be joining us a little bit more in a moment. So I came back to Australia after my postgrad was finished with a 3.75 grade point average.
La-di-da.
Well, yeah, that was pretty impressive, actually. And I started planning a wedding. I brought home my first boyfriend ever, Jeff, freaking out that Dad would hate him. I mean, Jeff had pierced ears and he wore a baseball cap back to front. Do you remember that?
Well, that was the 90s, you know.
But they loved him and they still do. He's like a son to them, which means they adore him more than they adore me, obviously. Did I tell you about a recent birthday card Mum wrote to Jeff in Italian that I had to translate for him? Jeff, our precious jewel, you are everything to us. Yes, that's what it said.
Jealous much?
I am. Before we got married, I made two things clear to Jeff. One, I was not going to change my last name. Two, I didn't want any kids.
Yep.
And you didn't either.
No.
Do you remember that?
Absolutely. It was never really been on my cards to have kids. So
tell me about that. Let's talk about that.
It's pretty simple, really. I mean, as a kid, I was kind of bullied. And so I think growing up, I didn't have the best child life. I did come from a broken family. So Mum and Dad divorced when I was 4 years old. Dad was, you know, stereotypical kind of abusive father, whatever. Mum was really gentle. She remarried a really, really great man. So I did live in a nice household from four onwards. So I had good role models there. I didn't have a drawing, I guess, or a feeling or a need or yearn desire to have kids. And again, like I said, I was bullied a bit as a kid myself. And so I didn't have the best experience. So part of my decision was I just didn't want to have another life go through the same thing I went through.
Yeah. And look, you've said that, you know, our whole lives together. You've honestly said the main reason why was, one, you just weren't interested, but also you didn't have a great experience growing up. And I think that's what you and I have in common. We were both bullied for various reasons. And even though your mum, who I only knew for a really short time before she passed away, just after we got married, was a really beautiful, beautiful woman. And her husband, your stepdad, Ray, was, I mean, they were great together. You know what I mean? They were lovely. They were the complete opposite of my parents. So at least you had that, right?
Yeah, no, well, absolutely. I think growing up, that was fine. And, you know, I think we weren't that same household. So I think just our own relationship and my thought stream was that, you know, probably not the best to bring up a child in this type of home, to be quite honest. You know, I think we've really evolved ourselves as individuals over the last 50 some years. You know, it's back then, it just, you know, from a relationship perspective, probably wasn't right to have kids. And I think, you know, unfortunately, that happens all the time.
And look, honestly, we were kids.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, our friends weren't getting married.
No.
And no one we knew was really having babies. You know, you and I was still going to uni when we came back. I went to uni. You started working. Yep. And your workplace was just a party workplace, really, when you worked at Salesforce. Let's face it.
It was fun.
It was fun, right? And you were a DJ. Yeah. So we got to go to a lot of parties.
Yeah. At that age, absolutely not conducive for our lifestyle wasn't conducive to kids. And even our goals and aspirations at the time. I mean, we decided when we were 27 to go globetrotting and around the world and backpacking, you know. And again, we were very fortunate to be able to do that. You know, and then 30s come along and your friends start to have kids. And I think that's what kind of changed, you know, things in the household.
That's right. So that's what happened, really. So we were quite comfortable with our decision to not have any children. Yeah. And then my friends, who I'd known a long time, who partnered later in life than you and I, started getting pregnant in their early to mid 30s. And things really changed. Like, I wanted to be the childless friend who fawned over their beautiful growing bellies. And while they were pregnant, I was exactly that. I loved watching them being pregnant. But when the babies came, I found myself on the outside and really lonely again. And I figured the best thing I could do was join their club. So, Jeff, what do you remember about that time when, you know, we were quite happily child-free and then all of a sudden,
Oh, look, to me, it was obvious. It was the clucky pressures, you know, seeing your friends having kids and the impacts of that on their life. And to you, it gave them their purpose because that's what they were talking about at the time. You know, that was their thing. They were totally immersed in that. And that gave them a purpose at that time for existence. And I think that's kind of what I saw from you, was that yearning. And me as a traditional kind of supportive partner in our relationship and being the white knight kind of guy, I supported you in that. So I didn't necessarily want children, but I supported your concept of wanting to have them at the time. And, you know, I've said it before, yes, you went through IVF and what little part I took in IVF, but it was a bit of a relief afterwards that we didn't end up having kids. Yeah.
So do you remember then, was it frustrating for you that, or were you just saying, okay, I'll do it because that's what Joe wants?
Absolutely.
But seeing that it was not what you wanted, like it was not what you wanted, and you haven't veered from that point of view in the nearly 30 years that I've known you.
Yeah.
Was that frustrating at the time though? Like, were you thinking something along the lines of, this is what I would have been thinking, aren't we okay as we are?
Of course I was thinking those things. However, I also philosophically believed if a child did come into our lives, then, you know, that was meant to happen, you know? And so if you did fall pregnant through the multiple rounds of IVF that you went through or through natural, you know, we did try all the temperature taking and rhythm and blah, 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 blah. And because you had a super focus at the time, you know, and that was fair enough as part of your, you know, what you went through in life. And it was harder almost after that, and then dealing with the next 10 years of you, more and more, almost 15 years of you coming out of that, because for some reason you attached having a kid to purpose in life over anything else.
Well, it's not for some reason. I mean, it's kind of what we get told, even though I've never been told that. Like, you know, we hear from people on this show talking about how, you know, people have told them they're selfish and when are they having kids, and like, we have to be really clear about this, and I've said it before, no one's actually done that to us, and I don't know why. I don't know why. Maybe our families and friends are just not that way inclined, but it's just not been a pressure that anyone's put on us, right?
No, and quite surprisingly, I think coming from a Catholic background, your parents being European, Italian, home, family-based kind of background, we surprisingly had next to zero, if not the other way, from your mom. Your mom at times would say, look, I love having the dogs. It's much easier this way.
I know, but mom says stuff like, you don't want to have kids. They're too much trouble. I'm like, I'm the only one you've got. You're talking about me.
I think she's talking about you.
Yeah, so it became an obsession, and I think it's like, you know, you and I have known each other a long time, and we're both the same. We get obsessed with something, and we're like all in.
That's it. It was just quite a long obsession, and geez, very expensive. You know, going through IVF was, you know, just mentally, physically, financially. You know, it's a very big commitment to make.
You know, I don't remember a lot about you and me during that time, so I think I've blacked a lot of it out, to be honest. Growing up, so in terms of the kind of messages that you got about family and children and marriage, what, if any, were they?
I'd say nothing about marriage per se. Like, we always had family stuff, normally on holidays. Like, we'd go to one auntie's house on Thanksgiving, we'd go to a different one on Easter, might be mum's house on Christmas. We'd have Christmas Eve with, you know, me and my brothers and my stepsisters and brothers.
Did you grow up thinking one day I'll be a dad?
Nah, not at all. I never really felt that kind of nurture or cluckiness or whatever it is, a guy, you know, what's a clucky for a guy? You know, do guys get clucky? Why do women get clucky?
Well,
eggs?
Well, you know? Is it hormones? But, you know, that's the conversation, isn't it? Is it hormones or is it the fact that we're being told, they're being sent these messages all the time, you know, about becoming mums? I don't know.
Look, you're a woman, you know, women's bodies are, you have ovaries, you have a uterus, you know, you have eggs, you're made to, you know, physically, you're made to reproduce children.
I love it when you say this stuff, it's really hot.
But me, no, the answer is no. I never had that real drawing. Again, if we had kids, I would have, you know, it would have been quite a difficult household because we're very yin and yang.
We would have divorced like pretty fast if we'd had kids. I mean, we've talked about that, and that is because we are very different in our approach to life.
Life in general.
I guess I want to talk briefly about what happened next for us. My depression that had been a lifelong thing became a lot more severe. And the whole issue of life purpose became huge.
Absolutely. Well, that was a massive focus for you.
What was that like for you?
Well, of course it was difficult. I think living, you know, with somebody who does go through depression and everything else that brings on board, it can be a very difficult thing. You know, being, if you're, again, I put myself in kind of a carer role as well. So I brought on my own shit, I guess, in doing that too. It was tough. It was tough watching you go through it. It was tough watching you hit the bottle, you know, and kind of look for something else to kind of drown or drink your thoughts away from it.
What did you do for yourself at that time? Because I was away in my head, you know?
We had different drivers there. The driver for you was that meaning of life, I need to do something, needs to be a kid. Mine was support Joe, have the child and be part of that life. When the decision was made not to continue with IVF, it was different for you than it was for me, of course. So that's why for you, it's like, well, shit, what am I going to do with myself? You know, what's next? For me, it's easy to kind of find something to occupy time. If it's not a child in life, you know, and looking after you, then what am I doing? And that's when we started setting up our business. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of became a wedding celebrant at the time. So I was working full time, became a wedding celebrant, and then I started up an online eBay-based business back then. So I started selling stuff on eBay, and you know, and then that grew and allowed you to change your shift a little bit of your focus there.
I'm really curious. So you never felt any grief at all about stopping? You probably felt a lot of relief.
Relief, not grief, but I did feel sadness. Like when you'd have a brown bleed instead of the normal one, we knew that the egg had passed through. So there was a level of sadness in there. Sadness for loss, but again, more sadness for you because I knew how much it meant to you at that time of our lives.
What would have been different, do you think, if we had kids? Besides being divorced, what do you think would be different?
Oh, everybody just didn't see me roll my eyes there. Look, I love traveling and doing stuff, so I think it would have really messed up our life as we live it now. I would not have quit work and followed up my own dream of working for myself. That shift allowed for where we are now in our lives. Had we had a child, it would have been totally different.
Yeah.
You know, I don't
know.
It's kind
of impossible to speculate, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just know a lot of those, I know what wouldn't have happened, you know, and it would have put a different strain on life, relationship, everything.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason why I went on my long bender was also like this resentment because I felt like I didn't have as much of a choice in stopping. You and I had a conversation about it, but the last time we did IVF, we were in the middle of a cycle. I was having my last lot of injections at home and we had a process, and that is, I don't even remember all the words for these things, right? Like you had your hormone injections first, that you know, with the EpiPen type of thing, and I would give that to myself and I had no issues with that. But then the last injection was just before the implant, And that was, you know, the big needle that you had to stick in one vial, then put it into another vial. And the idea was that you...
I don't remember any of that.
I remember it so clearly because this kind of led the next 10 years of my life virtually, right? Mm. So I remember saying, Jeff, the needle's ready. And you said to me, yeah, I don't want to. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't want to? And I'm holding the needle up and I'm like, what do you mean you don't want to? We're ready to go. I've cleaned my belly with the alcohol swab and this is what you do. You give me a needle at this time. And you just said, yeah, I don't want to.
I don't remember the time, but knowing how our relationship goes and how things have gone over the years, I dare say that something was really shitty that day and I didn't appreciate how I was treated or something happened. And so that was just me saying, I'm not going to do that. How can I be part of something joyous when I'm not being filled with joy at that moment is the only thing that I could potentially reflect to how I must have been feeling at that time, because I honestly, I don't remember, but I do know how I felt over the years. Yeah.
That was an incredibly sad day for me. I gave myself the injection because I'd already gone through the process.
Yep.
And, you know, it was another unsuccessful IVF cycle. There was a lot of resentment. I felt like I didn't have a choice, but it took a really long time for us to get to this place where I think we are now, that there's a little bit of freedom in the decision that we made.
Absolutely. Like, I think we've changed as a couple as well. Again, after so many years, we've gone through so many ups and downs and whatever. We've experienced life together. And I think now we care for each other differently. Like, we've always cared for each other, but it's I think we're just seeing each other in a new caring light as we progress into the next X number of years together.
Thanks for joining me and Jeff today for part one of this About Us series. So in 2 weeks, we're going to be answering your questions. If you want to ask anything about us, about our journey with infertility, about what we've done with our lives, and really how we stay married while working together from home on the same businesses 24/7. So send me an email or hop over to the Instagram page. I'll link to the post in the show notes. And again, guys, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a blast. I didn't know some of these things about Jeff, and it's really interesting, isn't it? After almost 30 years, we're still learning about each other. And yeah, talk. That's the most important thing. Keep talking. See you next time. I'd love you to join the community on Facebook and Instagram, which is at Unripe Community. And if you're childless or child-free, you're welcome to join the private group, which you'll find a link to on the Facebook page. If you want to share a story or let me know what topics you'd like to hear more about, please drop me an email at hellounripe@gmail.com. And don't forget, if you enjoyed the show, leave a review on your favourite podcast app, including iTunes and Spotify, so other people can find it. The website is where you'll find a little bit more about me, plus all the show notes. Go to unripecommunity.com.au.